for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Henry Coburn has been in and out of mental hospitals in the UK for nearly 9 years. He says being locked up for so long really damages your spirits. You feel forgotten. In 2002, Coburn was diagnosed with schizophrenia at age 20. It shocked his family, and together they struggled to learn how best to help him. Now Henry and his father, foreign correspondent Patrick Coburn, have co-written a memoir detailing their experience. Both Patrick and Henry join me in the studio. I hope you'll join us as well on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Feel free to join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
Good morning, Henry.
Good morning.
Good to have you both here. Patrick, tell us about what prompted Henry's diagnosis.
Well, I first learned about it. I was in Kabul in Afghanistan, and I rang up my just after the fall of the Taliban in 2002, and I called up my wife, Jan, in England, and I heard this very panicky voice on the phone, and she said that Henry had almost died, that he'd tried to swim an estuary in freezing, this was January, freezing water, had been rescued by some fishermen and brought to a hospital in Brighton in England, and that so I rushed home, and then he was later diagnosed as having schizophrenia.
It couldn't have been very easy for you to get home from Afghanistan as quickly as you would have liked.
Sure, I mean, it was the worst place in the world to get out of because there weren't any planes. So I had a driver, and I said to him, look, you know, this is what's happened. It happened to my son, and we've just got to head for Pakistan, and which is through the Kabul Gorge and the Khyber Pass. So he said, well, there have been attacks on the road, some journalists have been killed and so forth. And I said, well, you know, we've still got to do it. So I, you know, Afghans are pretty tough. He said, right, you know, we'll just, anybody tries to stop us, we'll drive straight over them. So I crossed the border, got to Pakistan, got a plane, came back to England.
Henry, what do you remember about that night?
I was walking east in Brighton, and I got to a big wall, and I just followed the wall, and I thought there were prisoners behind it, and I just walked and walked and walked, and I thought I was fleeing a nest, as it were, and I thought I was going to go back. I thought I was going to go back to Canterbury, and I felt forces ushering me to swim over the estuary, and woke up in hospital.
Do you remember getting into the water?
Yeah.
You do?
I got in and started swimming.
It must have been terribly cold.
Yeah, but, you know, you get, after a few minutes, you get, what's the word?
Used to it.
Yeah.
No, you begin to get frostbite, Henry. I mean, when you don't feel the cold anymore, that's when that means that you're not going to last
very
long.
Well, it's a lot worse when I got out of the water than it was when I was in it.
But the fishermen helped you out, and then the police came.
Well, they took me back to hospital.
So do you remember the police coming to get you and taking you to hospital?
Nah, it was not mental hospital. I went to a general hospital.
Yes.
And then because a couple of weeks previously there's a massive wall and I sort of tried to climb it. And the police, I was walking in bare feet as well, and it was January. And I got arrested, and they put me in the cell and said, you know, a psychologist came and a social worker came, and they said I was all right. But after I swam from New Haven, they said, I've got some good news for you. I thought, wicked, they're going to let me off. And he said, we got you into the Priory Clinic Clove. So it was a bit of an anticlimax, and I went there, and it was horrible.
Patrick, then clearly before Henry took his swim, there were symptoms you and your wife saw.
Yeah, there were symptoms immediately before, but only, there was the incident that Henry mentioned. But if you take it 6 weeks earlier, then it wasn't evident.
How about 10 years earlier?
No, it wasn't. I mean, Henry, even a few weeks earlier, Christmas, this happened sort of January, February, but at Christmas I'd asked Henry how things were going, and he said, I've never been happier in my life. I really like being a student in Brighton. And, of course, I've gone over in my mind hundreds of times, were there symptoms that should have jumped out at me? But even retrospectively, there really isn't much that, you know, his room was very messy. But, you know, what student's room is neat and tidy? You know, was that a sign? Well, maybe it's incredibly messy. But, you know, you can't, it's only retrospectively that points in one direction. Then a few weeks before this happened, then things like this started happening. But we didn't actually know, my wife and I didn't know much about it at the time.
Being the journalist that you are, I'm sure you did a fair amount of investigation into whatever the diagnosis was that the doctors then gave you.
Yes, I mean, one thing that sort of struck me then, was I knew practically nothing about mental illness. I'd never been inside a mental hospital in my life. So, of course, when I got to England, as soon as I'd seen Henry and at the hospital, I went back to my hotel and got online, looked up schizophrenia, and one of the first things I found was that a US doctor, I think the Surgeon General at one point, had said schizophrenia is to mental illness what cancer is to physical illness. And then it began to become clear to me that this was something that was incredibly dangerous and very long term, that this was something that was going to go on for decades. And while there were medications that could control it, there wasn't really much that could cure it. It was still something of a mystery. And, I mean, it also struck me that the knowledge of what goes in the brain, mental illness, is about 100 years behind knowledge of physical illness, something I didn't realize before.
Patrick Coburn, Henry Coburn, their new book, co-written, is titled Henry's Demons, Living with Schizophrenia, A Father and Son Story. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Feel free to join us on Facebook or Twitter. Henry, do you remember your childhood? Do you remember being a happy child? Do you remember your photographs? The photographs in the book of you as a child are pretty close to angelic.
I can't remember that much of my childhood. Picture of my face on the front cover, but looks like a different person to me.
You don't know that person?
No.
No, you looked exactly like a small, cheerful cherub, actually, Henry, when you were 3, 4, and later. Maybe you don't remember it, but I certainly do.
Patrick, why did you decide to do this book, and how did you do it?
Well, about 3 years ago, Henry was sort of getting better.
Through medication.
He was taking medication regularly, and which controlled but didn't cure, and he'd stopped running away. He'd run about 30 times from hospital. And had, you know... After the incident, this over the years. But that had sort of eased off. And I thought, you know, what could he do, you know, which would be positive? I mean, it's pretty depressing being in a mental hospital for so many years, seeing your youth disappearing. So I thought that we could write about what had happened to him. But I was very clear in my own mind that the way to do it was that I would write part of the book and he would write another part of the book. But the only way I think you can really understand what a psychosis is like is to be inside it. It isn't something that somebody outside it can describe.
Henry, what was your reaction when your father said, "Shall we write a book together?"
Pretty positive, really. Dad's talk. Pretty positive, yeah.
Henry, I think what your father is trying to do is to ensure that you stay in front of the microphone.
What was the question?
Pretty positive. And you were willing to enter into this partnership then with your father. The book is titled Henry's Demons. Patrick and Henry Coburn are with me. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I have in front of me a most unusual book. It's titled Henry's Demons, Living with Schizophrenia, A Father and Son's Story. And both father and son are with me. Patrick Coburn, a journalist, Henry Coburn, his son, have together written this book. Henry was born in London, raised in Canterbury. He attended King's School. He received several awards for his artwork. And in 2002, during his first year studying art at Brighton University, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. He recently moved out of a rehabilitation center to begin living independently. Patrick Coburn is a rock correspondent for The Independent in London. He's received many prizes for his reporting. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Henry, it's interesting to me that you call your diagnosis a spiritual awakening and not an illness. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, I think I've got my illness is sort of revelatory. I think I'm lucky to have the experiences that I've had, and I've learnt from them. And that's sort of that's part of the reason why you know, I've learned from the experiences. It's been more of a spiritual awakening because I feel special to have the experiences that I did, and they're seen as abnormal. It's like talking to trees, stuff like that. But actually, I feel special to have had to have had the experiences that I've had.
Do you still talk to trees?
Every now and again, yeah.
Yes, I do too. Every now and then I'll say to a tree, "You are the most glorious tree I've ever seen."
Yeah. I think they're around long before humans were, so they...
Exactly. What are your polka dot days?
Oh, that's just when everything goes wrong.
Give me an example of a polka dot day.
Well, I'm just walking around and I start seeing rings everywhere.
What kind of rings?
Well, like the rings that you get on your finger, put on your finger. I just start seeing them everywhere.
And what then happens to you?
Well, if I'm lucky, I've got a bed to lie down in and, you know, pass the time away. But if I'm unlucky, it means that I've got to go find a bed.
Go find a bed. Patrick, I can imagine that Henry's illness has profoundly affected your family. Your wife, Jan, who was here while you were away reporting many, many times.
Sure, yes. This is a terrifying, cruel illness that affects millions of people and many more millions of their families. And it goes on for such a long period. It doesn't really stop. It sort of beats you down. So, you know, things have got better in recent years. But initially, Henry was continually disappearing. You know, once he spent 2 days naked in the snow under a tree, we couldn't find him. The local police were looking for him. This happened again and again. But, you know, fortunately, my wife and I were sort of together doing this. I mean, I pity any sort of individual person who tries to cope with this all on their own. I think that could destroy people. So it was difficult to sustain over the years.
Do you think it brought you and your wife closer together?
Oh, very much so, because we felt that we were sort of fighting for Henry and for his survival. And he has survived.
And what about the rest of your family, his younger brother?
Yeah, Alex, his younger brother, had to bear quite a lot of the burden of this because so much attention went to Henry. Now, this was something we could see was going to happen. And we tried to sort of lean the other way, not to neglect Alex. But it's almost, there's only so many hours in the day. And if Henry's condition was really bad, then inevitably we were trying to help him. And so Alex felt a lack of attention because of that.
How is Alex today?
I mean, he's pretty good. I mean, he was a bit very brave about this. I mean, once Henry had a very bad time when he was sort of walking back to the hospital with Alex. But Alex is starting his PhD in physics in London. He sustained all this.
Henry, I'm interested in that you were found at least a couple of times with no clothes on in the snow. Do you remember why you did that or what it felt like?
Well, I felt the trees sort of ushering me to take my clothes off, so I I took my clothes off and sat under the tree, and the tree started moving, and the tree started moving, and you know, I could feel it pushing against my fingertips, and all my hair went on end, and it was marvellous, and I was sort of sheltered from the snow a bit because the tree was sort of, you know, above my head. And I saw lights flickering in the distance. It was, it wasn't quite, you know, me being in a snowdrift. I was sort of protected.
Now, someone came along and found you there and helped you back to hospital.
Yeah, well, I got out of the snow after a while and completely naked. And they sort of let me in their house. And
strangers let you into their house.
Yeah.
How kind.
Yeah. I've been lucky that way, you know. The wheels of fate have dealt me some hard cards, but also they've dealt me some lucky ones, you know.
It's interesting that what we do know about schizophrenia, Patrick, is that it does hit young people about the time it hit Henry.
Yeah, it's sort of 1920,
right,
for young men, and a little bit older for young women. Quite why it is, nobody seems to know, exactly why it hits one person rather than another. Again, there are pointers, but it's not entirely clear. I mean, this is part hereditary. This is part brought on by different stresses,
and perhaps even drug use.
Sure, yeah, cannabis and. And what seems to happen, and what I don't think people quite realize, is that 19 out of 20 people can take a certain amount of cannabis with no ill effect whatsoever. And in the 20th case, it can detonate a psychosis. And not just a lot of cannabis, but quite a small quantity of cannabis can do this. And when it's associated, when somebody has a proclivity towards it.
Henry, do you recall how much cannabis or marijuana you were using before the onset of schizophrenia?
Quite a lot, yeah.
Quite a lot.
I was addicted to it.
Yeah. You were addicted.
People say it's not physically addictive, but it's definitely mentally addictive, you know. And, I mean, I just couldn't say no to it, I suppose.
Did you feel it begin to change you?
No. I think the opposite, actually, that I didn't change during my adolescence because I was always stoned, so I sort of went, you know, I didn't develop as a... I didn't develop as a... teenager. I would have had a better time if I'd hadn't, you know. I think it can damage people if they do it start too young.
Patrick, did you know that Henry was using a fair amount of cannabis?
No, I mean I knew that he took it occasionally, but I didn't. I'd never taken cannabis myself. I certainly didn't realize the danger if somebody had a proclivity towards it. And I certainly didn't realize the amount that he now says that he was taking.
So
and it wasn't evident. You know, Henry's saying he was stoned all the time. But, you know, during this time, Henry passed all his exams. You know, he won prizes for art. He had lots of friends. It didn't stand out. And even in retrospect, I didn't see the symptoms. There was one occasion when he went on a student exchange to France, and the parents complained that he'd offered their son to share some cannabis with their son. And so maybe, you know, I should have been on the alert, but it really wasn't obvious to me and my wife that Henry was taking this amount of cannabis.
And the question of whether there is a connection between cannabis and the development of schizophrenia is very much up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, there's pretty good evidence that there is a connection. But exactly how it works, like so much to do with this disorder, is still unclear. Different studies produce somewhat different results. But it does seem more and more established that people who do take cannabis, and particularly from an early age, are more likely to suffer from a psychosis later.
Patrick Coburn, longtime journalist, foreign correspondent in the UK. He's currently the Iraq correspondent for The Independent in London. He's also been a Middle East correspondent for the Financial Times. His co-author is his son, Henry Coburn. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia in 2002 at age 20. He currently lives in a rehab center in London, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. There are many callers who'd like to speak with you, so we'll open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to Leonardtown, Maryland. Good morning, Amy. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm really enjoying this conversation and wish that I could sit down with Patrick and talk for a long time. I'm a member of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, and I have two things. I wondered if you have something like NAMI or NAMI in Great Britain. I've found a lot of great support and information and education through NAMI programs. And the other thing I was curious about is if you are aware of the work of the Treatment Advocacy Center that's in Washington, D.C., and it's run by E. Fuller Torrey, a psychiatrist who's an expert on schizophrenia, and they promote assisted outpatient treatment, which allows families and people who are close to someone who has a mental illness to get them into treatment even when they think they don't need it, so that they don't hurt themselves. And I know Pete Early is a big proponent of assisted outpatient treatment.
Patrick.
Yes, I mean, there are organizations in Britain like SANE.org, one of the charities. There's Rethink, another very good one. There's Mind. I find particularly SANE, as I said when I was earlier, I knew astonishingly little, or it astonished me in retrospect, about mental illness. So actually I received some very good advice early on from one of these organizations, SANE. Very briefly was, Henry was in a national health hospital. It's just saying, don't think there's a magic cure out there, that if you make terrific sacrifices, sell your house, that somewhere there's a clinic that's going to make Henry right overnight. It isn't going to happen. And they also said, look, stick with the national health for the moment.
Pardon me. How about the cost of caring for Henry? To what extent is that covered by the UK's health program?
It's all covered. You know, they've been magnificent on this. God knows how much money this has cost. But they've been very good. Despite sort of, you know, years of setbacks, they've still supported us and supported Henry.
At one point, you had Henry legally confined because you were afraid he'd hurt himself.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the psychosis was, frankly, real bad, you know. And I thought, you know, my wife and I thought, he was in real danger of something happening. I don't mean that he was going to commit suicide, but he was doing things so dangerous that it was almost the equivalent.
Such as?
Such as swimming in frozen lakes. One time he rang up the hospital to... One time he was sort of leaving the hospital to go by himself, but had a witness sister that he had a mobile with him, and they rang him up and said... He said, well, I'm on the railway tracks at the moment, which gave us about 3 heart attacks. So this was all pretty frightening. You know, confining somebody, I could, you know, this was bad for Henry, but the alternative was so dangerous that we didn't really feel we had any alternative.
And you continue to be concerned about Henry's safety?
Not now. No, this was sort of this is when it first happened and was pretty bad. Of course, from Henry's point of view, I mean, who wants to be confined, you know, regardless of your mental health or not? There was a purely practical reason for getting out of these places. And unfortunately, Henry showed sort of extraordinary ingenuity in getting out of any of these places.
Patrick Coburn and Henry Coburn, his son. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. By MetLife Foundation, committed to promoting healthy families and good nutrition, on the web at metlife.org. And by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org. This is NPR.
Fans of The Office may have seen Andy Bernard, played by Ed Helms, pull out his banjo and play. On the next Fresh Air, Helms plays banjo and sings with his band, The Lonesome Trio. Helms stars in the new film, Cedar Rapids. Join us.
Please search your heart, and maybe you'll find a reason to stay. I'm begging this time.
Welcome back. Both Patrick Coburn and Henry Coburn are with me. Henry was diagnosed with schizophrenia in 2002. Together, they have written a new book, Patrick the Father, Henry the Son. The book is titled Henry's Demons, Living with Schizophrenia, A Father and Son Story. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Henry, you kept running away from hospitals. You ran away more than 30 times. What did it feel like to run away? Why did you need to run away?
I felt sort of pushed towards that sort of frame of mind. Every time I ran away, I thought I'd lost on the street or in the wild. I thought that, I'd persevere and that I'd be able to live off what I found. But I never lasted very long. The longest I ever lasted when I ran away was about 8 days.
8 days? Yeah. Wow. That's a long time. What did you do in those 8 days?
We? Me and my friends. I went and saw some of my friends, and we went camping and lit a fire and sort of talked and you know. It was fun.
So you retained your friends, even though you had been hospitalized.
Yeah, some of them not.
That's good. That's good. But then you always found your way back to the hospital, or did people always find you?
Both.
Both. That must have been just totally horrifying for you, Patrick.
Yeah, it's completely terrifying, because we never knew what the outcome was going to be. I mean, the police were pretty good at looking for Henry, but occasionally they'd say to me that maybe they'd like to do something else with their time. And they found him, obviously, before he came to harm. But I think I thought at the time that he was pretty lucky. Henry, I mean, one of the things about Henry is that he remained very outgoing, mm-hmm. and ability to make friends, mm-hmm. even when he was, to my mind, in the middle of a psychosis. And so people liked him, people would help him when you would think, and maybe this shows people in a good light generally, that they might be really frightened of somebody suddenly sort of emerging from a snowfield or something, not wearing any clothes or something like that. But in fact, people were incredibly helpful, and that was one of the reasons he survived.
Henry, at one point your mother wrote in her diary that she felt angry with you for putting her through all this. She writes that it's like a game of snakes and ladders, where they just painfully climb the ladder, and now they're down a snake back at square one. Did you have any feelings of remorse or any feelings of sorrow for putting your mother and dad through this?
No, I'm selfish. If you gave me a time machine and I went back to square one, I'd probably do the same thing, you know. I mean, I learnt a lot from going back to the wild ways.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, you know, I knew Henry felt like this, and it wasn't all a sort of nightmare for him, but I think his memories are a bit rosy-tinted, that it was sort of, a lot of this was worse. I mean, I wouldn't have been so worried if I thought or had the experience of Henry being able to survive in the wild, to be able to feed himself, to clothe himself, and so forth. There was a good side to this, that meant that he would sort of be picked up eventually, before complete disaster. But also there was no comforting that he didn't know how to look, he couldn't look after himself. And it was rather extraordinary. He showed, as I said, great ingenuity of getting out of various locked wards, which had sort of two locked doors in between him and getting out. But once he was out, an inability to survive, which set in almost immediately.
Now, among schizophrenics, there is that sense of, I don't want to take my medication anymore. An awful lot of people feel that way, I have learned. Is that how you feel, Henry?
Yeah, I feel it sort of, you know, a bit artificial, and it's funny, it's actually when I gave up the drugs. I mean, there's a lot of talk about cannabis, but when it all started to kick off, was when I gave up the drugs. And that's why I didn't want to take the medication at that point. And, I mean, I did acquiesce in the end. But, I feel that, it's a bit artificial taking tablets. It's just, I'd like to approach things with a clear mind. And I'm not quite... it's been so long since I haven't I haven't taken the tablets. I don't know what I'd be like if I lived without them. But
we have an email from Sarah in St. Louis. She says, I'm interested to know how Henry's illness has affected his art.
Well, my art's it's changed a bit. I use more vibrant colours than I used to. You know, I used to be very much more detailed, but now it's all become a bit broader and a bit more sort of abstract figures.
Do you like the art you're producing now?
Not very much of it.
You don't? You liked it better earlier?
Some of the things I like, but it's I'm still learning.
We all are. Let's go back to the phones to Lehigh Acres, Florida. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I was married to my first wife for 25 years, and she exhibited some very strange things, and I was told I should divorce her because I was enabling her. And then my son let me know here recently, this is now, he's 42 now, and he said, well, he's been having trouble with depression since he was in college, and I'm wondering if these things are passed down through the generations off and on.
Patrick.
Yes, I mean, that's very well established now, I think, that the a strong genetic element in schizophrenia, that if you have somebody from a family that's had suffered from mental disorders before, even if they're adopted as a child into another family, that this is likely to emerge, not in all cases, but in many cases. But exactly what the genetic reasons behind this are is still very unclear. I was talking to somebody who was involved in research for the last 25 years. They said at the beginning they thought they must, you know, be able to discover exactly what happens over the decades, and they simply haven't been able to do that. And also the role of other things that come into it, of stresses, of crises in people's life, of cannabis. Yes, you can establish there are a connection, but what exactly is the connection is still an extraordinary mystery.
Patrick, were you surprised by anything you read of Henry's?
Yeah, I was wholly surprised because I thought that Henry could write vividly about this. One of the sort of points of the book is that I thought that, as I said, that somebody only inside a psychosis could write about it. And Henry described things to me in vivid terms, but actually I was surprised by the vividness that he could speak about what had happened to him. And I was also surprised of how this had happened before a psychosis was evident to us, that various things were going on in his brain, which weren't obvious to my wife or myself. That again came as a surprise.
Henry, were you surprised at anything your father wrote?
More my mother, how upset she was when I ran away. And, yeah, that was the main thing that, you know, that, I suppose selfishly, I didn't quite know what my family was. They were getting a torment. Because of me. But no regrets.
No regrets. And living now, as you do, in a rehab center, What is that like for you?
It's, I can think of better places to be. But.
Are you confined?
No, but you're getting metal detected on the way in, and you've got to sign out and attend groups. And I mean, it's fair enough, but.
And you have to take the medication.
Yeah, the dreaded medication.
The dreaded medication.
Yeah.
You'd really rather not do that.
Definitely, but I don't have a choice in the matter.
I understand. Let's go to Springfield, Massachusetts. Good morning, William. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm struck by how many, not only parallels, but identical experiences and situations members of my family have dealt with and are now. 4 out of 5 members of my immediate family have had major psychiatric diagnoses, close calls with schizophrenia, suicide, et cetera. And before going into any further discussion, I would like to share with listeners an organization of entirely of people who are diagnosed, there are no experts and so on, called DBSA, it's the Depression and Bipolar Association of Boston, but it is a national organization. And if listeners would want to find out more what's going on in your region, you could call 617-855-3298.
All right, sir. Thank you so much for that. And let's go now, after I remind you that you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show, to Collinsville, Illinois, and to Lisa. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just want to tell you, I'm almost crying because I have bipolar disorder. And I know what it's like to live with a mental illness and have people shun you. The stigma is so phenomenal, but you have to understand that some of the greatest people on this planet, Vincent van Gogh, Mozart, were probably crazy too.
Do you, how do you react to that kind of a statement, Henry?
Oh, I think it's too true, you know?
Too true.
The line between genius and insanity is, it's a hairbreadth away from each other.
I think there's another point. I mean, one thing that surprised me when this first happened to Henry and to our family was how many close friends I had who I thought I knew pretty well. When I mentioned it to them, it turned out they had a close family member who also had schizophrenia or bipolar, and they'd never mentioned it to me. And I thought, why didn't they mention? Well, partly maybe stigma, but actually just it's such an earthquake in family life. People don't want to sort of bring it casually into a conversation. But I don't think it's a great idea for people to bottle this up. But I'm still astonished by the number of people.
I know that you check through your own family history. After Henry was diagnosed, did you find any clues?
There was nothing direct. I mean, my wife's father's family, yeah, there had been, some people with a mental illness. In my own, difficult to find any recently. Though I sometimes wondered when I did this, since I keep finding friends of mine who have relatives with severe mental illness that nobody knew about, do I have ancestors who had severe mental illness and just the knowledge was suppressed at the time and I don't know at this stage?
Henry, having written his book with your dad, what do you hope people might learn from it?
It's a hard question.
What do you think you've learned from writing the book?
There's always a way out. You know? I mean, when you're in danger, I always think there's someone there watching you thinking, you're right, you'll be looked after. And it's the same with, I hope it affects people in that sort of respect.
Patrick?
Two ways, really. I think it's going to be should be very valuable for people who to learn from Henry what it's really like to be inside a psychosis, which I haven't really seen written down before, from somebody who's to a degree suffering from it. And also the sort of millions of people who go through this and feel alone can see what happened to other people and perhaps benefit from that.
Henry's Demons is the title of the book, Living with Schizophrenia, a Father and Son Story, written by Patrick and Henry Coburn. Thank you, Henry. Thank you, Patrick, for being here. And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.